Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hi, it's Craig Shoemaker. They want me to do Les Mis because I'm a Les Mis freak.
You are listening to Storyworthy. You will love it. Oh, yes, you will. Be here this week and next week, too. I'll be here and here for you.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannah Spinney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannah Spinney, and we're coming to you from the Healing Center in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh, they have one of those here.
They have many healing centers, but yes, yes. And this is to heal people who have eaten too much bratwurst. No, it's to heal people who need healing.
Oh,
here
okay.
At the Healing Center
All right.
in Milwaukee.
Well, I can get behind that.
Healing is good.
I think we're here because we want to heal tonight because our storyteller tonight is Craig Shoemaker, and he brings forth the topic, laughter heals.
Laughter heals.
Well, when I think that laughter heals, I think about Patch Adams. Like that, I automatically go to that.
Hmm.
Which was a true story.
Yeah.
And so that's encouraging. But sometimes I have a little bit of a fear of clowns. So I never really thought that would heal me. I thought that
the clown
scare the hell out of
psychic
me.
Scars, and then you need the laughter to heal those scars.
When I hear the topic laughter heals, of course I think about what I went through. And when I went through cancer and had surgery and went through chemotherapy, and I had a lot of people tell me, you know, to cheer up.
What we mean by laughter heals.
Yeah, but a lot of people told me, here's what you need to do. You know, a lot of different religions would send me different prayer cards, thinking of me cards. People, I think, very well-intentioned.
Yeah.
Trying to cheer me up, as it were. But I think at the end of the day, the laughter has to come in like the
absurdity. See, I would have sent you a bar mitzvah card.
Yeah.
Just to make you... No, but it's like laughter... It's not, people think laughter and comedy have to be happy. It's not about being happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a release. Because it's like what's making me think of is when my mother had cancer in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going back for... And I've told these stories before, but it ends up with... I'm living in my mother's house. She's in the hospital. I get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I say, yes. And he goes, is this here, Finney? He goes, your mother is dead! This is exactly the way, and at that moment, I'm like, oh my God, my mother's dead. And I'm like, this is the funniest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life.
That was the
only
words
person they could find in the whole hospital with enough English, just enough to say your mother is dead. Not enough to go, we are sorry to tell you, I'm sure that you have, you know, you're waiting for this moment. You want to, your mother is dead. That's it. I'm looking up at the sky like, really? Really? You're laughing? You think this is funny? It's like, I wasn't happy. That
right.
doesn't mean I didn't laugh.
And it definitely puts things in perspective, you know, especially an illness. When I was going through cancer and going through chemotherapy and I lost all my hair, I was doing a lot of stand-up comedy at the time. So I had a couple of different wigs. Some of them were very normal-looking wigs, just long blonde hair wigs. And I would do a lot of hosting. I always did more hosting than I did, you know, actual sets of comedy. So I would wear, you know, a certain wig at the top of the show. And then in between sets, I would wear another wig. And then I'd wear another wig. And nobody would even seem to notice that I was wearing different wigs.
Yeah.
Until, between the last act and the headliner, I would come out like in a rainbow afro wig. And then they'd finally be like, wait, that girl's changing her hair, you know? And then I would take off my wig. And, you know, that was just for effect, just to kind of get people to say, like, what? She's
yeah, but
really
you needed
sick.
To, yeah, but you needed that. You needed to deal with it, and you need to deal with it in a humorous way because you were doing a comedy show.
Right, I know. But, you know, going through cancer myself, I was also just going for impact. You know, like I always felt like people were looking at me and they could tell that I was bald or they could tell that I was sick. You know, even if I had a wig on and a baseball cap, I still had no eyebrows.
Right, you're taking control of it.
And I looked puffy. I mean, I know I looked sick. And right, so people would look at me and I would just be like, you know, what do you think you're looking at? You know what I mean? What, not pretty enough for you? Or what's the problem? And I would like to shock people and take off my wig, say, you know, now what do you think, huh? You like that?
Yeah, but it's just, again, it's about a reaction.
Yeah.
It's like people, you know, people expect comedy to be like not only happy, but they expect it to be like moral in a way. And to me, it's like, it's either funny or it's not funny. Things that are completely wrong can be funny. Like, somebody can tell you a joke that goes against everything that you believe in your life. But if it's funny, you'll laugh.
True.
So it's not about right or... There is no right or wrong. There's only funny or not funny.
Right.
These are, you know, they don't go together.
Right. Well, I definitely am always for the laughter side. That I will say.
Yeah.
All right, and tonight's guest, you guys, Craig Shoemaker. Oh, my God, Hannes. I mean, the guy's got more credits than... I just can't even get over his body of work.
And I can't even laugh. It's so depressing how many credits he has.
No, but as an actor and as a producer and as a writer, and you know, now and then, he just starts singing Les Mis. That's what I know about Craig Shoemaker.
Sure.
Every once in a while, he just goes off.
The only thing funnier than Craig Shoemaker singing Les Mis is Russell Crowe trying to sing Les Mis in that movie. That's... fucking hilarious.
Wow, that's pretty tough, honest. That's pretty tough.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I did see it. I didn't think it was that bad.
It's horrifying.
Oh, well,
it's horrifying.
You know. Okay.
No, look. You can't have Hugh Jackman, who has a voice like an angel. That's right, a hairy Australian angel. And what's her face, the tall girl? Whatever the fuck her name is. Anne Hathaway. And then you got Russell Crowe, who's like, dude, you can't sing this. You can't sing it. Like, I can't. You know, he can play Gladiator. I can't play Gladiator. No matter how much I work out, you put me in a Gladiator outfit, it's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, it's okay? Not
going
to work.
Stay in your lane.
Okay. Stay in your lane. All right. Yeah. Listen, you guys, before Craig comes on, I did want to mention that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, you should.
You should get in that lane.
Here's what you need to do. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at Storyworthy. That's easy.
That's simple. That's simple.
You can't spell it any other way, by the way, honest. Yeah. If I say, follow me on Storyworthy, you know where you're going?
Yeah,
at Storyworthy. Yeah, it's right. Just that simple.
Except for your mother, who will go to Story World.
That's
she still
right.
has no ability.
It doesn't matter. It's all right. Yeah, she's 80 years old.
Yeah, she's not on Twitter.
Not so much. All right, you guys, wherever you are, stick around because Craig Shoemaker is on his way. Here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have celebrity colorist Marco Paluzzi.
And I'll be talking about the family business.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hello out there, it's Kelly Carlin, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
And we're back. We've left the Healing Center in Milwaukee, and now we're at the Healing Center in San Luis Obispo, which is a little bit more of a new-agey kind of a thing.
Let me tell you something, Hannes. If I'm going to heal, it's going to be in San Luis Obispo.
I love San Luis Obispo. What a beautiful place.
It really is. All right, you guys, he's here right now. Craig Shoemaker, like we said, he's a comedian and an actor and a producer and a television writer and a host and a best-selling author. And Hannes, if that's not enough.
It's not enough.
It's not enough.
I am not impressed yet.
He's been on Broadway.
What?
And how many U.S. presidents has he performed for? Go.
73.
Less.
8.
4.
Okay.
And check this out. One of his very first Comedy Central show was voted by viewers as one of the top 20 specials of all time. Wow. What?
That's crazy talk.
That's a huge credit. He also has a 90-minute Showtime special called Datitude. And last year, his comedy album, The Last Stand-Up, went to number 1 on iTunes. And that album, as you probably know, is about his 35 years on the road. And of course, let's not forget, he'll always be the Love Master.
When he wants to be. But he doesn't have to always be the
That's
Love
right.
Master.
You can find Craig
He's
over
He's a serious human being. How dare you pigeonhole him?
You can find Craig over at craigshoemaker.com and at laughterheals.com and on Twitter at The Love Master. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Craig Shoemaker.
It all started in Philadelphia. Woo! My dad left when I was born. Something I said, wah, he was gone. My mom raised us, all females, which for a little boy is not an easy task. I didn't have a scale.
Never knew what I weighed my whole childhood. I went out for wrestling. They said, what weight class? Petite four? I would watch television with my mom, and my mom was always miserable about my father leaving and blamed him for her life and wasn't smiling very often, except when we watched the Hollywood Squares. She loved the center square, and I came to love him as well, Paul Lynde. He was Uncle Arthur on Bewitched. He was in Bye Bye Birdie, played the father. And I just wanted to be Paul Lynde, and I wanted him to be my father. My mother said that he was cute, and she read in Parade magazine that he was a confirmed bachelor. So I decided to write him a letter and introduce him to my mother. I dreamed of being the first father and son team on Hollywood Squares. I'd like Craig and Paul Lynde for the win, please. I pictured it.
Take it, son. It's a sports question.
That was what I had imagined. I wrote him a letter, very serious. Dear Mr. Lynde, my name is Craig Shoemaker, and I am 10 years old. I live in Philadelphia. My mother is single. My father left when I was born, and I was wondering if you would like to meet my mother. Here's her picture in her belly dancing outfit. Her other name is Scheherazade. And she thinks that you're really cute and funny. And I've never seen anyone make my mother laugh like you, Mr. Lynde. I hope you write me back, and I will give you her phone number. Does Toady Fields really have a wooden leg? And how do you get into those squares? He never wrote me back. I have a feeling why. I have a feeling I know why he was single. One time on the show, they said, Paul, how many balls in a billiard table? He responds,
how many guys are playing?
I mean, when you're a kid, you don't really get that the ascot might be a giveaway, that he's not going to write me back and ask for another picture of my mother. Maybe my father. So I learned at an early age to kind of laugh at things because we were very poor. I thought the word evict meant move. It was the same word to me. Look, mommy, here's the eviction truck. And we'd pack up and move again to another area in Philadelphia. Lived on a corner of crack and homeless. I was really slight. My idol was Don Knotts because I was 5'1", 92 pounds in high school. And not a pubic hair anywhere near my region, which is a nightmare. Like these days, that's what they want. They want to achieve, you know, baldness, the manscaping. Back then, though, you had to have Duck Dynasty going on down there. That was happening. That was a happening man. I'd be in the gym showers. The other guys are already mature, lathering up their Armenian fro. And I'm in there trying to soap up a wall switch. I basically had a wall switch turning on and off the lights in the locker room. And I used to get wedgies all the time. Because I was built like Barney Fife, who was my idol. From the Andy Griffith Show, I'd come home and watch television because my mom wasn't there. She was working. I was raised by myself on television on something called UHF. Now my kids go, what's OOF? Well, it's the ultra high frequency, and this little channel changer, you change it like a safe. 3 to the left, 4 to the right. There's channel 17, Philadelphia. And zero in, and there he was. I had to jam a hanger for an aluminum foil for better reception. There he was, Don Knotts, Barney Fife, who was so much like me, all this bravado, but really scared underneath. And I was the man of the house. My mother would say, you're the man of the house. I'd walk around like Barney Fife. Somebody in here made a big old mess in the kitchen. You better clean it up, little missy. These are certified lethal weapons. And I learned how to make people laugh by doing impressions. I didn't want to be me. I wanted to be anybody but me. Being this little scrawny kid with no basis at home and no love at home and 13, I was kidnapped and molested by a guy that I thought was going to be a father figure. He took me to this ghetto hotel, and I bragged everyone how wonderful this weekend was going to be, seeing our Philadelphia Eagles play the Redskins. And I was so excited, and I was not only let down by that, but when I told my mother that, she said, never speak about this again. You will never reveal this to anyone. No one will believe you, and it doesn't matter. You'll sound like a whiner. And I put it away for a really long time. I wasn't quite sure how to deal with this pain that was inside of me. So I went off and did everything to separate myself from my body. Drugs, alcohol, girls, women, whatever I could find. Usually two legs. And I mostly went on the road to do stand-up comedy to try to get that love and attention that I had lacked from never hearing it from a father who's now a cult leader, running mule rides in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania to feed his 12-member harem, and my mother, who has still never said I love you to me and doesn't speak to me to this day. I didn't understand the tools of life and how to live, but something happened within this comedy career that made me stop. I started to get these indications on, wait a minute, this is different. This isn't about me anymore. This isn't about my attention. This is about something bigger than that. There's a bigger purpose to it. And then one of the epiphanies that happened, I did this movie, The Love Master, based on this sexual character that I do. The character derived from all the girls that would use the F word with me in high school. Friend. There's always the friend. They posse P. They all go together. They would bring me with them. That's what a geek I was. Tommy's so hot. George is so hot. I'm thinking, what about me? And underneath, I'm thinking, give the geek a chance, baby. The love master. I love you so good. Your sister's toes will curl, baby. I gave them the badass that they wanted. And that's how the love master happened. They made a movie of it. The director of it was one of my best friends from Philly. Golds, my friend Michael Goldberg. We filmed the movie. During the filming, actually, some people had told me that they watched my show, and after the show, they had sex, and it was wonderful sex because it was fun, and every guy tries to be the love master, and all these people gave me credit for children they supposedly couldn't have. Wow, something's up to this laughter thing. And I think it's because you're not trying to have a child. You loosen up and allow laughter to give you the fertile soil to fertilize, basically. Hate to talk about children in terms of cow shit, but but that's what you're doing is you're setting out a place for a child to grow. And Golds, we were about to watch a game in Arizona. We were filming, and his wife was ovulating. I said, "Go do the Love Master." I went out, and got sandwiches. I came back; he was already done, and baby Kayla was conceived. And a year and a half after that, they said you have brain cancer. They told me it's brain cancer. They said you have about 3 months to live. 3 to 6 months, and they said, get it together and say goodbye to everyone. And that's when the light bulb came, the lightning, whatever it was. I said, you know what? I'm going to get behind this guy that made me laugh, makes others laugh. He wrote Cool Runnings, Little Giants, great comedy writer. Let's get behind him. That's how you bond with friends anyway, is through laughter. All my joyful moments in my life, I'm still friends with my friends from kindergarten. It all stems from stories that make you laugh, even if you've heard them 9,000 times. And we got to behind, I formed Laughter Heals, and I had these programs we did in aftercare facilities and cancer patients and their caregivers who also sort of have it worse than some of the cancer patients. These husbands couldn't take it. They were powerless over what was going on with their wives, and they were freaking out. And they said, what can I laugh about? There's nothing to laugh about. And people showed up there with funny stories of even their process. One woman wrote the 10 pluses of being bald. Never a bad hair day. This is how she chose to deal with her prognosis. So they gave him three to 6 months to live, and he lived 15 years past that. Because he had a joy for living, lived for his daughter, who never saw him as anything but sick, because he had this terrible process that he went through. And then when he passed away, I actually saw him on his deathbed. He made like 9 different recoveries during those years. It was amazing. And we would always laugh. We went to a Phillies game one time, and he had a seizure, and he was standing up having a seizure. And then we are back in a Philadelphia fan, down in front. And we like try to whisper to the guy, he has cancer. He's having a seizure. I don't care about his cancer. Sit down. I can't see. So we laughed about it. We howled laughing. And even at the end, he was in a coma in his catatonic state in the valley in this hospice care. I don't even know if he knew it was me at first. That's Golds. I don't know what else to do. You're just sitting here lifeless. I said, I don't know. I said, you want me to jerk you off? And I made like a little miming. I said, I've never done anyone else, but I've done my own. I'm pretty good. And I swear he comes out of a coma and he goes, and he laughed. And that was the last I saw him, and died a week later. And we had a celebration for him. And the best part about that was we told funny stories the entire time. We made it a funeral, not a funeral. And we celebrated him by giving him what he gave to us. And that's the joy of living. And his daughter, beautiful daughter, now 17, gets up and speaks. She said, "Thank you for telling me who my father was. I never knew him as anything but a sick man. And you told me through your eyes what a wonderful man he was and how much laughter he brought to the world." And that was the moment I went, "Oh, yeah, you're doing the right thing." And that's my story.
What kind of cancer did he have?
Brain cancer.
Yeah, horrible.
Yeah, yeah. And they just, they did this protocol at Duke that where they planted a chemotherapy chip, and it seemed to have worked. But he just kept on taking turns for the worst, and then he would make another comeback.
Yeah.
We actually filmed it for our documentary we're doing it, Healing Powers of Laughter. And we filmed him just before he took his last turn coming to see my show. And his whole family flew out. And we went backstage, and we shot it all with just our we had a gang of about five of us, Team Golds, that got behind him all the way.
Yeah.
All the way to the end. And that was our raison d'etre. That was what we wanted to do, is just keep him as happy as he could be in, based on those horrible conditions.
And they said 6 months.
Yeah.
No, they said 3 months at first.
3 to 6 months. They basically said, "You're dying. You're done.
Yeah.
You know, get it together and say goodbye to everyone." And none of us accepted it, including him. He actually asked the doctor not to tell him, and the doctor did anyway. Mm. And because he didn't want that on his mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was going to, his daughter would never know him. And, you know, she was a year and a half at the time. But he made it through through a lot of different circumstances. Of course, he had to go through the treatments and so on. But, and.
Okay. So Laughter Heals. This pretty much comes from the story with your friend.
Yeah.
So now you form Laughter Heals. You have laughterheals.com.
Yeah.
And you do these seminars.
Yeah.
And is this. Does this have to do with the marriage thing as well? Because I know that you literally go out and help people's marriages.
Well, that's different.
That's a different thing.
That's from my book, Love Mastered. But, you know, I have my doctorate and everything. So I see clients and I see groups. It's basically bringing in love and laughter. Is how are you going to bring that in? And I do guided laughedations to break through these obstacles. People live in fear, and we're ingesting it every single day. Anyone running for politics, that's what they do. They rely on it.
All
and then you watch the news, and they get you upset. Then the drug company sponsors the news to handle the anxiety they just handed you.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is laughter is truly – why do they just fluff it off and just go, "Oh, it's the best medicine"? Well, if it's the best medicine, why aren't you going to the pharmacy more?
Well, you know, they do have laughter clubs in other countries, like in India.
5,000 of them in India, at least. Yeah,
they've got different.
Instead of going to Starbucks, they go for a little jolt of laughter.
Where did you get your doctorate?
Yeah, California University.
In Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
You know, I'm also from the Keystone State.
Yes, you know that I 210 on your SATs. You're an honor student
at this point. That's right. What exit did you live off of? Of the turnpike.
It was Route 70 or whatever.
Valley Forge, exit
24. Oh, you're talking about when I lived in Philly. I lived in Philly, it was like Norristown. You get off there and go into Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's what
I
really like.
You're trying to stalk me?
Pretty much. Here's what I like about you.
I don't live there anymore, by the way.
In the past.
You talk about.
I wish you would, because, you know, nobody like that was asking me where I live.
Exactly.
You talk about love and laughter. You talk about Laughter Heals. And here's the difference, because I know a couple other people in this town that kind of have that sort of a message. But you walk the walk and you talk the talk. Like, you really, you've been through a lot in your life and you've come out the other side. It's like, I believe you.
Well, I think that, thank you. I think that part of it is, it happened in my life and my career was, I had a point in the career where it was going really well. And everyone was getting a sitcom but me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, why?" And they said, "Well, you don't have a point of view and you're not original and things like that. And, you know, you get the thief tag if you get famous, you could get that tag for a little while." And then I said to myself, I had another epiphany. I said, "Just go tell only your stories. Don't give your opinions." And that's what people do in the self-help book world. That's what they do. They just repurpose Napoleon Hill or Dale Carnegie or whatever it is. And they just make it into their twist and have a great title.
Right.
I'm saying it, I won't give you any suggestions or advice or guidance unless I've experienced it myself. And I've experienced a lot of pain that I've been through. And here are the ways I got through it. And you were talking about Patch Adams and clowns. That was one of the reasons I started this whole thing called guided laughedation, where you just make a choice to laugh and I guide you through it like a meditation. Mm-hmm. And it's only your choice. You don't need jokes. And that's the thing is, listen, all the power to him. It's wonderful and great work. Anatomy of an Illness, Norman Cousins, same thing. But you don't really believe it. So what I said is, why don't you do this laughedation? Because if a guy came in a clown outfit, when I'm sick, I'm pulling out the plug.
Yeah.
Either that or shooting him, because I'm not a clown guy. Mm-hmm. So I said, it's subjective. Comedy is subjective, but laughter is not. You make the choice to laugh, and it oxygenates your body. Healing endorphins are released. Stress is relieved, which is a huge cause of disease. And you are dealing with your mind, body, and your spirit all at once. So that's what I'm trying to be Johnny Laughter Seed about, to spread the awareness of the power of laughter. And I think now there's an unfortunate thing about being a comedian is comedians are very cynical and selfish, in general, of course.
And generally come from a place of huge pain. Dissatisfaction, especially with their family. And look
by
at your dad.
99.9%.
But they're still in the pain, and that's the difference, is I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm really on the other side. I'm madly in love with my wife, which immediately is received by comedians as sarcastic, always trying to get laid or trying to, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that's who I was, too. Plenty of sarcasm. So I'm trying to take this world of, there's also the spiritual self, you know, consciousness community, but they think you need to sit on a rock in Sedona to have spirituality. What I'm trying to say is it's spiritual to laugh. So build this bridge from the woo-woo to the ha-ha.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That's one of my goals, is to take what you already have and just access it.
And
the way you access it, any of our blocks, you can get right through by laughing. Just making the choice of laughter, and it changes your condition right away, and you realize how meaningless whatever it is.
Right. And what happens is you exude this confidence and you exude happiness, therefore other things come to you. You just got a new job on Fuller House writing it.
Yes, correct.
And do you want to be a television writer? Or
I didn't set out to do that. As a matter of fact, that's what I teach also is I believe that we're all a wellspring of creativity. If you tap into it and don't listen to other people the myopic people who will categorize you. That's why managers won't handle me because it's too much. You look at my bio. It took you forever to read my bio. It took up half my podcast time.
Yeah.
It's a very large bio, but it's not impressive to me. All it is just answering what's coming out and not putting a lid on it.
So what do you really want to do?
I didn't have an intention.
So now you're
I don't have intentions.
Well, you're going to give the next 25 weeks of your life to this show, and you got to work a long, long hours, I'm sure, as a story editor as a writer on the show.
So now I get to write for other characters and write with people, which I normally don't do during stand-up. I do it alone for over 35 years since high school. I've been doing this and professionally, even right out of high school. I did it professionally and put myself through college and paid for my college doing comedy. But now I get to write with other people and for other people. I think it's really
so. Are you going to sort of relax a little bit, or are you going to keep doing all the other things as well?
Well, I retired from stand up for a while because I didn't have the same purpose. I didn't want to get on stage for, you know, to get laid and get attention. That's out now.
Right. Okay.
So now it has to be for another reason, and that's why I'm doing this retreat coming up and, you know, just so many things that I'm doing that have more of.
Yeah, you're doing.
It's more defined
it. Yeah. You know, the retreats that you take, you and your wife go along, right? And you've got other people.
My wife usually doesn't go. I got little ones.
Oh, so she stays with
the
kids.
A real little one. I'm trying to, you know, I'm a little older dad. I'm trying to hope that people don't say, is that your granddaughter? So I'm trying to get in shape. This is a true story. I went for my first run in years.
Yeah.
About two blocks in, someone pulls her car over and rolls the window down. Are you okay? I got in.
You're in a very happy marriage. And
extremely.
So I just think
it's
that
it's actually amazing that it could ever happen.
These weekends that you go, I thought when you do these retreats that she would be with you so that we can see the picture, the happy, successful life that you built.
No, and I think people hear the story and they understand or they follow it or, you know, and it's nothing perfect, but it's what I'm sharing is the journey to get here has been an arduous one, a painful one, a difficult one, and I've actually had these successes, and that's been some of the loneliest times of my life, and I share that too.
Yeah.
I won this award once on ABC.
Yeah.
Huge award. The previous winners were Jerry Seinfeld and Ellen DeGeneres and Jeff Foxworthy, and I thought in my little mind, I'm going, now I'm going to have a sitcom about a gay redneck and a show about nothing. And it was one of the loneliest nights of my life.
Wow.
Being in the back of that limo that they gave me with a limo driver I didn't know, with a trophy. saying you're the greatest. No one was with me.
You didn't have a wife or a girlfriend at the time?
No, I did not. And I had no one to share it with. And it was so strange. And I walked into like comedy clubs that I didn't even hang out in with my trophy. Mm-hmm. And it just made people more angry. All it did was heighten the resentment of other comics.
I see.
It didn't do anything for me that I thought it would do. And these are the things that I'm understanding now about being present and being in the now and doing things that are important. I was backstage. I won another award. Now, this is the ultimate of not... I won the best film, independent film festival, Los Angeles. 15,000 people in the audience. I'm backstage. I'm going, who am I going to call? Oh, my mom. She'll finally love me and give me attention. So I call her. And Robin Williams is with me. He had won a Lifetime Achievement Award. I said, Robin, will you call my mother? Talk to my mother. I'm going to call her in Philadelphia. She loves celebrities.
Well, I love Master's mother. Oh, yes, I will. Does she have a big penis?
I said, great, great, great. So I call her up and I go, Mom, guess what? I'm standing here with Robin Williams, who's going to talk to you. And my film just won the Independent Film Festival. Can you believe it? And there's a pause and she goes, that's very nice, Craig. You know not to call me during Jeopardy.
Wow.
And as she's hanging up, I hear, who is Anwar Sadat? Just to get one more answer.
Wow,
to beat my stepfather.
That is really unbelievable.
And I turned to Robin Williams. I will never forget it. He said, just simple to me, I said, she hung up on me. He goes, I understand.
Yeah,
he understood. He understood exactly where we come from.
I tell you, I've heard this story, the same story from so many people. I remember Adam Carolla talking about, you know, sitting at the dinner table with his mom and his mom going on about how there's nothing to watch on TV. There's absolutely nothing on television. And Adam, at that time, had three shows on TV at the same time. And his mother sitting there saying, there's nothing on TV. I'm getting rid of the TV.
Yeah, it's amazing how we try to please our parents. But one of the things I could do in my coaching is I say, you've got to break the cycle.
Yeah.
There are people that just continue it and continue it. They do it with their politics. They do it with their religion. They almost do it. They're not answering to their insides. They're answering to their outsides of what's going to please someone else. I married my ex-wife because it was my exact mother.
People do that all the time.
It was to the T.
People do that all the time.
Matter of fact, they hang out now.
But that's very
and my mother doesn't speak to me or my wife.
So this time you can get it right, except you don't have the power to get it right.
Yeah.
Well, but that would make sense, though, that she would be friends with your ex-wife because they were the same person.
The exact same person and have resentment if you ever leave the fold. And
people
a lot of
do
parents
it
do
all
that
all the time.
A lot of parents do that to their kids. Is
of
they,
course.
You leave the fold and that's it,
right.
Mister.
Who
you're
do you
done
think
with
you
me.
Are? You think you're better than us?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. But here's
all you're
the
doing
thing.
Is answering your call.
But what also I think is liberating to realize is that everybody's just a human being and everybody's got so many flaws and problems.
Yeah.
And just because they're your mother doesn't mean that she's perfect at all.
No,
clearly not.
The opposite.
And neither was your father, and neither is my parents. And so it's really liberating to realize that you'll never get their approval, but also that why'd you think you ever could? They're just another person.
Yeah, and we empower them to dictate how we feel about ourselves. And I just believe that we need to tap into our, if you're tapping into the creativity, tap into your creator. And that is this essence that's inside of you, the divine, the light, whatever it is. And that's what I tap into. And what unfolds is a river. And I don't block the river. That's the whole key, is you don't block your flow.
See, and that's the kind of thing that your mother and all of our parents
block
like,
it.
Didn't. They're not in that. Yeah, my parents were different from you guys, like, don't leave the fold. Like, there wasn't a fold. It's like they just weren't interested.
Oh, no.
And I think that's huge.
It's scary to them, too.
They're not.
Yeah, it was an
you're breaking out
era.
For them.
Yeah.
And by the way, we all have this urge to break free and be who we truly are. I had a mantra, actually, that really helped me bring in my now wife.
Tell me.
Is all I said to myself is, I just want someone who sees me for who I truly am, not what they dictate me to be. And I kept it going. I kept it going. And I started dating her. She was a friend of mine. And I would look around the room for something I would normally be punished for. I'm going, oh, here it comes.
Yeah.
And it never happened. And 10 years later, it never has.
Wow.
Not once.
That's so exciting. Yeah,
because she knows my essence only has good intentions. Only. No matter how much I mess up, and we all do, she knows that at my true core is this wonderful human being having this human experience, this spirit that's coming through. And it comes through laughter and tears and whatever it is. She knows that that's my true essence and not somebody who's trying to get her. Now, my ex-wife, I wrote a book about, It's called Love Mastered. Most of it's about how difficult it is to have someone attack you, accuse you, blame you, victim of you, all of those things. And it's trying to take the high road and defend yourself with all you have. False allegations. We went to court.
So it's very difficult, though.
We went to court a few weeks ago.
You're walking this fine line.
It's 11 years later.
You don't want to address it, but then how do you possibly stand up against allegations? I mean, you have to stand up.
Well, here's what I did. I actually fired all lawyers, believe it or not. Yeah, because lawyers, what they do is they operate out of fear as well, and they also operate out of a place of winning. And winning, they're going to attack my ex-wife, which is not my intention. She's the mother of two of my children.
Of course.
So that's the... There's the rub, is how do you still take the high road when someone says you molest your kids?
Yeah. Ugh.
She says you whip them, you've duct taped them, you've kidnapped them. I mean, she comes up with stuff that she sees on television, and literally knowing that the court system is perfect for that, because many women are victims for centuries of domestic violence.
Yeah.
She leads every conversation with, I'm a victim of domestic violence. Yeah. Of who? Yeah. Who did it?
And then the lawyers will keep going on because money keeps
exactly.
moving.
And the lawyers, that it's just like they're like pit bosses. They have to keep you gambling, and the whole system is set up for that. And the system's set up on fear. Because let's say someone made a ruling for me, and it turns out I really was a child molester.
Yeah.
So they have to guard their options. So they send you, it's cost me $1 million. They send you to this one and this one, this expert and that expert. And even the experts can't go 100%.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They can't, because their careers, everybody's career, they're all afraid of their career. I turned to a lawyer once and I said, I'm done. I said, she goes, you see the world through rose-colored glasses. I go, you know what we're going to do? We're going to issue mutual apologies before the court.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we can stay out of this mess.
Because
was the most wonderful lifting moment in the whole process in 11 years was that day that we did that. And everyone in the court, including the judge, cried.
Well, how did you get her to go along with them?
Because I that was the one time I had her over a barrel, because I had restraining orders against her and her two brothers. It was up to me to lift them.
Yeah.
And you know what I did? I lifted it through spirit. I said, you know what? I'm not into this. Yeah. I'm not going to punish them. That's not going to ever work for me. Getting revenge will never work. It's only playing her game. And that, by the way, it's exactly what people like that want. They want you to come back.
It's so frustrating. No,
they only know force.
But doesn't she want closure to all
of
this?
No.
She doesn't want closure.
I'm sorry. Crazy people. No. That is her relationship with you. And as sick as
it is. And
with
most people.
The arguing and the fighting and the accusations is her version of a relationship.
Correct.
She thinks she still has a relationship with you.
That's correct.
So this is why
I was just talking
to a guy I know.
Thank you, Dr. Honest.
At work. Yes.
He's good.
No, I'm good with analyzing that kind of thing. But it's like, I was talking to a guy at work, and he's got like an ex who was a baby mama, and she lives in another state, and she just will text him like horrifying, nasty things.
Yeah.
And I said she wants you
to engage.
That's all she's got.
Yeah.
Is to say to you, you're a horrible person. You were horrible then. You were horrible now. You're a bad father.
And then I told her the other day, I said, you're trying to convince the children of your narrative.
Yeah.
And literally, she can't hear it. She can't take a step away.
They can't hear it.
They can't hear it.
But you don't have to.
Because that sounds like abuse to them. You calling them on their abuse is abuse to them.
That's
but
and it
why
goes
do
on
you
their
have
list.
To conversate with her? Should you not be able? You shouldn't.
He's
have
got
to
two
say.
Kids with her. I mean,
two
what
kids.
You gonna do?
I wish we couldn't, but here's the thing, and I'm very happy about this. The court did do one great ruling: is people like that go behind your back and use lawyers in the system. And they manipulate the system. The judge put us in therapy together, and she has to be there. And she's squirming like a fish on a deck, because she has to tell the truth, and the kids are confronting her.
Oh, boy.
And it's a wonderful thing. Now, by the way, I'm still guilty of response. Still, to this day.
You have to stay out.
Oh, I know. I know I should, but I do get engaged. It just is a human thing to defend yourself with your life, and it started from my childhood and has gone into now. Now, I do these laughter therapy sessions, and you realize when you do them, I do them. Sometimes I'll like laugh at the most sick stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll go, she accused me of molesting my kids.
Yeah.
And I'll laugh through it, because you realize how meaningless
it
is.
But that's what I meant
it's about. It's meaningless. It's only the meaning you put to it that causes more pain.
Yeah.
If you can shift your consciousness through the power of laughter, it's almost like hypnosis, where you can create a whole other reality.
Right.
And
that's
why not
I meant
laugh
by
at it?
There is no right and wrong.
Right.
That it is funny.
Right.
That a person. that you would be accused of molesting your kids.
Right.
It's not funny that you have to go through it, but it's such a ridiculous thing for her to go all the way there.
Yeah, all the way there.
She can't be like, he's neglectful, he's a self-centered comic, he's this. It's like she's got to go. At some point, he threw my children into the atmosphere. It'll go past them. It's
painful,
but
funny. Well, so with this experience,
because it's so insane.
It seems amazing to me that you still care about other people's marriages, because I have it written down here that you personally saved at least...
I fixed up.
At least eight couples' marriages.
No, I fixed those people up.
You fixed eight
completely,
people
like
up.
Cyrano de Bergerac, told them what to say.
Because you know what I've done is I've referred three couples to my mediator into divorce. I've helped three people divorce.
So he gets the couples together and you help them.
Mine didn't all stay together, by the way.
Oh, I see. Okay,
I fixed them up and they ended up married. As a matter of fact, in the book, do you know what the book is, Love Mastered? It's actually a woman in pain who's going through divorce and she's a fan of mine. I don't even know her. She's 3,000 miles away. And something inside of me said, hey. She just gave me like two lines. Thought you want to know Matt and I are getting divorced after 30 years of marriage. And I went, some big guy upstairs, some big G, said, speak to her, share your pain, share your story. And the book is our exchange back and forth over a year.
Wow.
Where she becomes this amazing writer because the lid was taken off. The light was allowed to shine, of which this guy, it turns out he abused her. She never admitted it to anyone. He's an alcoholic. All these things came out in the book, and she had this discovery process with the only safe person being me. Never a therapist, no one else, not her sister, nothing. And that's what the book is. We go back and forth, and she makes me a better man. It's like a love story, and I love her dearly. And then midway, she says, I'll never meet a man. And she goes, I've 30 years, and I just wasted it because he proposed in a bar, and I married him because he was good looking. And you know what? I said something inside of me. I fixed her up with my friend from Philadelphia, and now they're getting married.
Get out of here.
And they have this beautiful, beautiful relationship. Both of them got out of abusive relationships, and now if they died tomorrow, they both at least experienced for 2.5 years
happiness.
Of absolute, profound, divine love. And they had never had it before. So if you can go to that place in your life, even if it's for a minute, what a wonderful way to be. And they have happiness and joy. They go to comedy clubs all the time. That's where you need to get your medicine, too, is go to more comedy clubs. I say that selfishly, CraigSchumacher.com, if you want to go to my calendar.
And you have officiated quite a few weddings, and you call it ha-hatrimony?
Ha-hatrimony, yes, because if anything's going to sustain your marriage, it ain't going to be your,
it's not going to be my cooking, I'll tell you that.
Well, that can improve, but the other stuff like falling out hair and bellies growing and all the, you had cancer for a while, and I'm sure you weren't really crazy about the bald look.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So what's going to sustain you is laughing, and especially laughing at each other and laughing at your bald spot.
So what's the doctorate in?
Humanities, and I studied this for years. I know all about the chemical reactions and everything that happens to your mind, your body, and your spirit. It's all transformed if you choose to laugh. And we have done studies, and we're doing a study in the movie. We're taking 7 patients with various illnesses. So seeing is believing. You'll see.
And that's going to be a documentary.
Yes, we're in the middle of it right now. We're just starting.
And so who do you like? Do you like Michael Moore type documentaries? I mean, what kind of documentary are you talking
about? I'm a documentary freak.
Are you? I do too. I like anything true. Why not?
Yeah,
why
that's
not?
I'm addicted to the OJ story,
too. It's so good, right?
I went to the trial.
For John Travolta's makeup.
Oh, I know. Everybody's saying that. If he can get past that.
Too weird.
And Nathan Lane playing the ex-Marine.
Yeah,
that doesn't work. You know, I remember the trial. I was at the trial.
How did you get to go to the trial?
A little celebrity thing. They let me in. I sat with the Goldmans.
No kidding.
I just got to know Kim. As a matter of fact, she's really sweet. She calls OJ the killer. Won't call him OJ.
Well, he is the killer.
Well, I mean, she won't use his name. She only calls him the killer. But anyway, it's just the most. And Marcia Clark, Sarah Paulson, is the best actress.
Amazing, right?
She is unbelievable.
She nails it.
Nails it. And there's a lot of great acting.
And David Schwimmer's really good.
Yes, he's very good. Nathan Lane, though, when you just, he's playing this guy that plays a tough guy in life.
Yeah.
He's a phony F. Lee Bailey.
Yeah.
He went after Furman, Marine to Marine. And I can't see Nathan Lane, Marine to Marine. I think he's going to break out in music.
Really hard to see him any other way.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's
played so many characters
like
that.
So listen, let me just ask you before we play Shotgun Storyworthy. You've done a couple of podcasts. In fact, you've done many different versions of podcasts. You've had so many female co-hosts. I've seen names like Jennifer and Lisa and Katrina. and there's all these co-hosts coming in and out of your life. What is that all about?
Well, I had a podcast going. It was actually called Laugh It Off, and I went to different studios, and I'm just never really found the right home. And yeah, I've had different co-hosts, because the one thing I'm tired of, and this is why I'm happy to be writing on Fuller House, is I'll be in a room filled with the juices of comedy, which I don't have. I don't hang out with comedians late at night. I go home to my family. I love my family. And so now I'm going to be in a writer's room every day. Very excited about that. So I'm kind of happy that I didn't get a podcast in the last year. I was kind of seeing...
Well, now you're going to have a regular schedule, though.
Right.
So in my head, I'm thinking that you are going to start finding time to try to put something else together.
No.
Because you're going to be putting
all
your energy
into... That's all.
Okay.
No, and it'll take up so much. Plus, I tour still.
I see.
I made a deal with them that I could still do some touring. CraigShoemaker.com for calendar information.
But you don't do the Love Master at all anymore.
No, I do.
You do do it.
It's you know who my idol is in comedy is Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah, of course.
So I went to a concert. It was an absolute spiritual experience. Yeah. It was an epiphany. I said, oh my God, that's what I want to do on stage.
Rock stars are like comedians.
By the way, they love
like
comedians too. I just posted yesterday a picture of Brian Johnson, lead singer of AC/DC, who just actually, they're off tour because it was hearing. And it just happened, and he's my friend since 85. He was in the front row.
How fun.
And he actually, my movie Totally Baked that I wrote, I sent it to him, and I produced it. And he goes, me son, can I write the music for it? And he wrote the music for Totally Baked. He sang at my wedding. They love comedians. Rock guys love comedians.
Yeah.
And we love them and can't even believe they're hanging with us.
Yeah.
Totally Baked is like a cult classic.
It's a movie about marijuana.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact,
wait a minute.
As a matter of fact, Oates is in it from Hall & Oates. He did a little guest star in it. And
couldn't get Hall, huh?
He has Lyme disease.
So
he couldn't make it.
Didn't.
So I played Hall.
Okay.
And it was a low budget movie, so I just had a blonde haired girl stand above me and just dangle her head. That was my wig. And his mustache, they just went over and chopped some guy's hair and glued it on his lip. That was the kind of movie it was anyway. It was all about the marijuana. But
here's something else I have written down about you. You never saw a Simpsons?
Wow, where'd you get that information?
Well, it's right on the page.
What page?
I have crap.
Wait a minute. That's a page I don't even know was written in ink.
You can't even believe
ink.
The producer in me. You don't
that,
even
that
know.
That is an amazing thing because I don't even remember saying that to anyone.
And
it was almost like you were at a meal of mine that I discussed
it. And how can
it.
That be?
I think you were at another table eavesdropping.
Tell me why that is.
How in the world?
I also have that you just recently saw Saturday Night Live.
Wow.
But you didn't even watch a Saturday Night Live. You just watched clips.
I used to watch the old Saturday
just
Night
the clips.
Live, but not really.
I
don't think I've ever watched one all
this
the way. Now,
strange.
You have to remember something. I work at night.
Yeah. Yes.
So both those shows are on at night. It's very, very difficult.
Well, The Simpsons is on all the time.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
No,
and also with children.
Are we going to get into why I wasn't into the Beatles either?
I don't know, were you?
As long as we're confessing.
No, other people have told me that they have never seen an episode of The Simpsons, and I'm like, how... How did you avoid it?
Do you know what my first episode was?
What?
The movie, The Simpsons.
There you go.
And I watched it with my son who loves The Simpsons and my wife who loves The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And I watched it with them and they were howling laughing. I'm going, I don't get it. What's Ipa? I didn't get it. So, Ipa. I don't know.
Well, you
why.
Have a lot to look forward to.
Well, that's true. And I don't really... I have such a thing with animation. I actually have a new series that I voice.
Okay.
It was just sold to Saban Entertainment. Very excited about it.
What's
the lead.
That called?
It's called Bigfoot Littlefoot.
Oh, Bigfoot Littlefoot. I have it written down here.
I'm shocked that you didn't know that one.
No, I do. I have it written
my stalker.
Here. I do. I have it right here, actually.
Which
Go
one
ahead.
Of those balls is lower than the
but
other?
I'm not,
That's
I've,
I have
I, when I was a kid, I was really into animation.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I became an adult. I stopped doing it because it represented...
I know people like that.
It represented kind of the stoner in me that is not there anymore.
But of course, you did...
Yeah, no, I've heard that before.
You do the Don Knotts impression on Pleasantville.
Yeah, I looped him. As a matter of fact, his daughter just came to my show here at the improv.
Oh, that's so kind.
Nice.
And
wow.
It was really cool. And it was really weird imitating her dad in, like she's the ultimate judge.
You're so good at it. You're so good at it.
Well,
I mean,
looped him in a movie. You can't even tell.
Wait a minute. So
10
right.
voices.
He was alive. He was in the movie, but you couldn't understand
him. He was sick.
Him.
No, he was sick. And they brought me in. They said, replace these lines. Like one of them, he circles an apple on the telestrator. It's actually my voice going. I had to do him as an old guy.
Yeah.
Boom. What do you call that right there, bud? They're forbidden fruit here in Pleasantville. I'm the TV repairman. So anyway.
He was so fucking awesome.
And nicest guy in the world, by the way. Now, let me ask you, you're straight, right?
Yes, I am straight. Okay.
Hannes just got married.
Nice.
Engaged 7 years.
To a woman.
Nice.
Yes, okay. Look at that.
Look
all
at you.
Happening.
Good for you. Next
you know
will be kids.
We keep it together, we laugh.
Exactly right. That looked a little cynical. I didn't believe you.
Just because I'm a
now
terrible
you're talking
audience.
About not believing them.
If you ever need a mediator, I got one.
Okay,
I'm
great.
Sorry, what?
Okay, good. Yeah, so what about
so someone had told me that Don Knotts was really hung like a gasoline pump, right?
I've heard this.
Right. They
before.
Had told me that.
Really?
So I want to ask you as a straight guy. So I did Comic Relief, and he was on, and and people said it was the funniest thing watching him watch me live at Universal.
Yeah.
Doing him on stage. It was like 1997. And he turns to Steve Allen. He goes, he does me pretty good, doesn't he, Steve? So anyway, they pose us next to each other. And I got to know him. I still have a picture of it. They put us in a back room together. For an hour, I talked to him. And I had heard this about his schlong.
Yeah.
So tell me the truth. You're with him for an hour. Are you looking? Are you checking out the
you'd
package?
Have to.
Oh,
you'd
am I?
Are you going to be a pecker checker?
Yeah,
Much be like, hey, I got to go to the bathroom. You want to go in there with me?
No, I wouldn't do that. I didn't go that far. I was like looking down going, are those pleats?
Well, didn't you just, you could just ask him.
I almost did, but he was so serious. I'm from West Virginia, started as a ventriloquist. And I mean, he was just like on and on.
I couldn't afford a dollar. I had to use my cock.
He never got there.
Yeah.
I did want to just say, just straighten it out for
him.
Him
and Milton Berle are the guys who are famous in comedy for having giant cocks.
That is true.
Wow.
But Milton Berle was like a tall guy, so.
And the love masturbating. Yeah. I'm so big, I make flesh-eating bacteria gag.
I also love your machine gun bit.
Oh, do you? Yeah, that's a
classic. I think that's a lot. That's really cute. Do you still close with that?
I do.
I think
it's
really
adorable.
I
actually enjoy that because it's the audience playing Army from when they were kids doing their machine gun sound.
And we've all done it.
Everyone has a unique sound. I don't let females do it, though.
Really?
It's funnier when guys do it. You know when you watch America's Home Videos, lasted many years? It's always a guy getting hit in the nuts.
Yeah.
It's never a woman getting hit with a hammer in the uterus. It doesn't happen.
it's not funny.
That's never funny.
It's not as funny when a woman does something, but a guy does it, you're losing
it. A woman could make a machine gun sound.
I'm saying they can. That's not the idea of the joke. I'm hoping they can't do a good one. That's the I would totally rip on that one.
Okay.
You know
you
I would rip on that one.
Sounded
I'm not
like
going
a machine
to.
Gun? That was Elmer Fudd. That was Elmer Fudd.
Be very, very quiet. You wascally wabbit, I'm going to shoot you.
Don Necklin, Don Knotts' cock is huge.
Oh, wow.
It's huge.
Hey, listen, you want to
play
some...
It's a hell of a schwang.
You want to play some shotgun story
yes,
with me?
Yes, I do. I want to play some shotgun story.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
And let's see what our topic is. So the topic is my mom. The reason I got into comedy was my mother belly danced in my high school graduation party. Now, she was always known as like kind of Mrs. Stifler of her time. All my friends wanted her. And she's like good looking. And she all of a sudden she became Scheherazade, a belly dancer. She bought us a keg. She came down the steps with finger symbols and veils. I have a little treat for you and your friends. Ching, 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 ching. My friends around the keg going, whoa! I'm wasted, but your old lady looks good. They're throwing quarters at her. And that was the moment I decided I am definitely going to be a stand-up comedian.
Wow.
I am not due to be an accountant.
All right. 37 seconds. Look
perfect.
At that. That's what's so great about this game, Craig. See, now with under a minute, I know something about your mother. I knew something before, but now I know a little bit more.
Yeah.
That seems specific.
How old do you think she was when she had you?
24.
So she was a hottie.
Yeah, absolutely. Always was.
Yeah.
Always was. That was her thing. Is always look good and look young, and she loved when people gave her attention.
Yeah.
That was her thing. She actually, her driver's license, we had no, the numbers were at the top of our driver's license in Pennsylvania, and she actually would get in with little scissors and cut it out and change the license, and she like burn it so it looked like it was burnt, and she would like melt it in this plastic. So she would hand, I said, who's that for? Who's checking your ID? She said, I don't want to be old. I said, what's that? Is this for a cop to go, whoa, you look good? So she's looking for any opportunity.
So she changed her age on...
on her license.
Wow.
And it was a horrible job, too. It looked like Edward Scissorhands.
And it wasn't about, it wasn't about, you know, getting carded or anything. It was just literally about her age.
It was about her age. Yeah. She always wanted to be younger.
I don't mind getting older because I find the funniest people, the most interesting people are definitely in their 50s and 60s. I don't even think you get a sense of humor until you're like over 35.
Well, I've noticed that from playing colleges. I don't even play colleges anymore. They have no sense of humor. They have to look around the room for permission on what to laugh at. They do the racist room check. They go, oh, let me see. He talked about somebody's race. I have to check.
Oh, for God's sakes. Even here we get like letters. I got when it was like I made a joke. I don't even remember the joke. It was like you're talking about.
It was about Canadians,
right?
Yeah,
it was like everywhere. Six Flags. And I was like, oh, there's no goddamn Canadians there. Now, the joke, of course, is that no one's ever said that about Canadians.
Right. The joke
ever
is
in the history
Canadians
of the world.
Ever...
You gotta
nobody ever minds. And this lady wrote, and she's like, well, does he really feel like that about, you know, because I'm in Canada and. And, you know, he couldn't say, I hope there's no blacks that, you know, and I'm like, I was going to like, okay, you know what? It wasn't a crazy letter. It was written like, okay, maybe right. I'll, and I'm trying to write a response. And the response is, I have to explain, well, obviously it's not funny to say, I hope there's no blacks there because people actually say that. It's funny to say, I hope there's no Canadians because
nobody
no one
say
has
that.
Ever. And then I'm like, if I have to fucking explain this to you.
Right.
Why are you listening to
the
show?
Do you know, actually, we got a bad review on iTunes from that. I mean, I know it's stupid and who cares, and I'm not supposed to read reviews, but that lady actually wrote on iTunes.
But she was always going to write.
The people that review are the ones that take time.
I know.
They take their time to take people down to their level.
I know.
People that are positive don't even take time to give you a good review.
You know how your crazy ex-wife is trying to engage you?
Yeah.
These are people who don't have someone to engage.
Oh.
So they're engaging with strangers
Craig,
through
now,
the internet.
Listen,
isn't that
you are smart enough to understand that whole idea of engagement. You know this.
Yes, absolutely.
So how you've got to be able
nothing
to
do with smarts.
Yeah, but I know
it has nothing
I shouldn't
to do with
smart.
It's about I talk about this in the book. It's spiritual fitness. If you don't do your exercises, whatever it is, laughter lunges, whatever it is. If you don't do your exercises to make you more fit in that way, anyone can take you down at any time. A reviewer, a heckler, a relationship. They say something that brings, you know, they push a button. They call it pushing buttons. Well, those buttons were installed. You're the one who can remove them.
Good for you.
So I don't remove them all the time. Mm-hmm. I engaged last night with my ex-wife. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. I wrote back to her. You know, because, you know, you just get tired. Just go, are you really not getting it yet? Can you really, really keep doing this? And when are you going to look in the mirror and go, wait a minute.
Well, her plan is not to end it, though. Her plan is not. There is no.
But how do you as a person go, I've never had a career, well, in 30 years.
Yeah.
I have roommates, and you know, that I, you know, discard and friends that I discard if I don't like them. If they don't say what I want, I have therapists that I discard. My whole life is discarding, and yet I'm not ever going to look at myself. I'm still going to blame this guy that I was with for 7 years. I mean, really? Do you not step in the mirror? And that's the part where my logic it defies logic. So because it doesn't make sense for someone who has this disorder.
So I'm just wondering
to
though,
do
like,
anything but that. It's so, like if I said to you, "Why are you coughing?" and you say, "I have emphysema." I'm not going to go, why are you coughing a second time?
Right.
And that's just
but
what they do.
But everybody has a threshold. And so when you do these weekends and helping people out, you hear these thresholds all the time.
Yes.
People are telling you and they're saying, and that's when I can't even. And then what do you tell that person? Because this is spiritual
Them. I tell them about my rumbling, stumbling, fumbling, and crumbling. And I share that with them so they know that I'm not a guru.
So basically,
with
you're
all
telling
of your
them
answers.
It's okay that you're feeling this way.
Absolutely.
Because I feel this way still. Even though I'm
still
an authority, I still go through it.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call myself an authority, but I have been through it. And I definitely experience absolute happiness and profound love that I never in a million years thought this was the case. I thought love was what I was told it was, and that was performing. Literally and figuratively performing for mom, performing for relatives, performing for friends. I still have a codependence of like I care so much about what people think, which is a ridiculous occupation to be a comedian in that world.
Right.
You're caring what people think.
Yeah.
You know, oh my God, I offended you. That's another thing. That's why I really do try to keep things personal. I tell personal stories because no one can say that offended me that you told a personal story about yourself. sorry, it's my story.
Right.
So yeah. that really turned things around. So any of the work that I do, I usually, come from that space.
Yeah. No, I believe you. Yeah. I believe you. And I hope that this can be in your past someday, that whole issue with her. I hope that
It might never be, but I'm okay with that.
No, look, at this point, okay. I don't know how old she is, but it's like if she hasn't turned the mirror around yet,
no.
She's not going to do it.
Yeah. No.
She's not capable of doing
it. Now, here's the spiritual growth. It's my acceptance of that.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly, because you have to talk about what your response is.
The only thing you have the power to do
is your response.
Is to
that's,
accept.
That's exactly right. So if I resent her back or if
intense,
I fire
man.
Back at her, yeah, of course it is. It's really difficult. But that's my lot in life. That's my journey. And I'm really happy about that. She became my greatest professor.
Yeah.
Because we could all get lazy. I got
and
a great relationship.
And you're helping so many other people now.
Right. Because
you really are.
Well, hopefully because they understand, and by the way, I do Skype and I see clients. I take them on walks.
Wow.
I don't just
nice
let them sit
that?
On a couch. I take them on walks because you really are engaging your whole mind, body, and spirit when you walk. And I do the guided laffidations. It's just different techniques.
If you have your doctorate, are you a doctor?
Yeah.
Do we say Dr. Shoemaker?
Well, I've never
you
used
could,
it, though.
You could, but you could.
I used it on my book, and I use it
for
certain
you.
Things.
I
but
would.
I've never, done it for a reservation.
Yeah.
I'm so poor. I grew up with poverty, and I still think like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That I don't even know what a good table is.
they
always go, I want a good table.
Away from the bathroom.
Just as long as it's out of the toilet.
Near the window.
Is that good?
It's away from the entrance.
You
the
come
exit.
From money or something? You know this
oh,
stuff?
Oh, my God. Come on,
no,
man.
She comes from waitressing.
Come on.
She knows from waitressing.
Yeah, from waitressing is what I come
no,
from.
All
the
I
youngest
want,
of six.
All I want
Pittsburgh.
Is a booth. I don't care where it is.
A booth.
And the booth is never in a bad spot. The booth is never.
I do
the,
like booths.
I only like
but
booths.
But I've never used doctor to get there.
I'd like to have a booth in my kitchen. I've always thought that would be a nice
thing.
No,
if I ever open a restaurant, it's going to be called Booths. And that's all that will be in there.
As long as it's
booths.
Not John Wilkes Booths.
Okay, before we wrap it up, can we just hear a little...
Wouldn't be.
Let's just hear a little bit of Les Mis and we're going to wrap it up.
Really?
Just a little bit. Something.
Do you want to be one of the characters?
Yes, I do.
Now... Yeah.
I want to be Ipanim.
Oh my God, that's my girl. Now, I don't have the voice as much for Marius, but if you'll be Ipanim, I will be Marius.
I could try.
You okay. have to go, don't you fret, Monsieur Marius.
Yes, yes. Do I start?
Yeah, sure.
Don't you fret, Monsieur Marius.
I will stay with you till you are sleeping, and rain will make the flowers grow. You will live, Ipanim, dear God above. And I will heal your wounds with words of love. Now you say, hold me now.
Hold me now.
And let it be.
And let it be.
I'll be you. Help comfort me. You would live 100 years if I could show you how. I won't desert you now. You have to say the rain.
I won't desert you.
No, the rain can't help me now.
The rain can't help me now.
Oh, God. I was in love with you for a
Shit.
Minute.
God damn it.
And now I'm going to walk
it.
Away. I'm going to go right back to Cosette.
Does anybody want a croissant?
Oh, is that what they do in France?
Go ahead. No, I want to hear a little bit more. It's so beautiful at the very end.
You do the end.
On high, hear my prayer in my need. You have always been there. I'm just a Les Mis freak. I'm
you
sorry.
You are this amazing.
That is one of my goals. That is on my list, the bucket list,
you're
to be Javert.
You're a very good singer. You are.
Thank you.
You're
thank
a very
no, you know
good
what?
Singer.
And that's why, and you said you also have a huge bit making fun of Russell Crowe. It's well, like, yeah, it's like that's, you have to be able to sing like that.
He looked like he was falling asleep, like he had narcolepsy.
Because he was concentrating
he was trying so hard
on emoting.
Because they were singing it live. This
yeah.
is where, which I thought was a brilliant idea.
He's a fugitive coming, all and hungry.
Yeah, he's trying to hold his...
Falling from grace, God be my witness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never that's shall just... yield. Because he's a strong character.
Yeah.
Russell,
yeah.
who's normally strong in all of his characters,
he was
weak because he knows he can't
to
sing.
And his no. sphincter was closed up because
yeah.
he couldn't emote.
Right. You know what? He would have been better off pulling a Rex Harrison and just...
and speak like, of the words.
And speak it. Because he's
that's
a good fucking actor.
Right.
So you should have just... Like, you know what? I'm
you
the only guy in this world.
You know what, though,
world.
In that movie?
No,
nah,
you can't
in that one.
You would be like...
It's about
well,
the music.
No, I
they
know.
They just should have cast someone else. How
they
about that?
They should have cast someone else.
How
that's
about someone
problem.
That can sing? I went crazy for some of those characters. Like Ipanim. Oh, my God. She's so hot.
And it's not like they're...
I have a pass... with my wife.
Is that your pass?
If Eponine? There's an if there's a good Eponine out there,
that's your pass.
I can bang her with free immunity.
Yeah. Oh, good for you, man.
Because I can sing with her in bed.
About it,
we all have
my
dreams.
Wife doesn't sing that well.
Yeah.
She's a good singer, but she can't do Eponine. If I got an Eponine, like even the one Banks from the movie, and she said, Craig, I want you.
Yeah.
I just call my wife.
Oh,
go, I found one. You're just going to have to go watch the kids tonight.
What if you find a girl you want to have an affair with and you just use your money to put up a community theater production of Les Mis so she plays this girl? You go, well, I found an Eponine. You go, you backdoor.
The next time I have you on the show, forget the Simpsons trivia and the fact that I know about you and SNL. Yeah. I'm going to learn some more Eponine.
Please.
That's what I'm going to do.
You had me at
first. We can do an entirely singing episode of Story. Would you like to spin the wheel?
The first line, I was actually thinking of calling my wife.
Yeah.
I was thinking of calling my wife. I think I got it, honey. I was thinking, and then you couldn't remember the words.
I fell apart. I'm sorry, I'm intimidated.
I was like, are you kidding? Yeah, I'm calling her. Sorry,
listen,
honey.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Blessed.
I know you're a very busy man.
I hope this worked for you.
It
wasn't very funny.
It's amazing. It doesn't have to be fun.
I know. I
you
hope
are
not.
A fascinating person, really, and I met you a couple of weeks ago, and I really felt an affinity to you right away.
Yes,
and
I did
as well. Yes,
ago.
And we met.
Yeah.
You still don't remember? I think it was Hank Feiger's class.
Were
you ever in Hank Feiger's class? Let's just
it does
answer
not
that.
Sound familiar to me.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Are you a bad memory guy?
Yes.
No. You don't have a good memory.
Wait, who was talking? Oh, it's you.
No, I have bad short term.
No,
long term, I'm
happy. I
haven't
been in that many acting classes that I would.
Well,
remember,
name them.
But it's
name acting class.
Brian Reese.
Okay, Brian Reese, that's who it was. It was in the same facility as Hank Feiger.
Okay, that's what it was. It
over
Brian
here,
Reese.
Over on Fountain.
That's
there
exactly
you go.
Right. There
that's
it is.
Where we met, Hannes.
All right.
It was
a
great
very
class,
good actor,
man.
By the way.
Brian Reese
he's
is
a very good actor.
I am
you know
a
that?
Good actor.
Have you ever seen him act?
Of course, many, many times I've seen Hannes act. Really? He is a very good actor.
That's where we met
I'm
20 years
you,
ago.
I'm going to send you a link to a movie I made with her ex called The Fast Foodie.
Oh, really?
It's on Funny or Die.
All right.
Yeah, he's very good in it.
To be emoting about cheeseburgers.
Nice.
Seriously.
I would love to see that.
It's really
I've always enjoyed you. And
all
I can't
right.
believe
yes.
you two teamed up and I felt synergy with you the minute I met you too.
Yeah,
see?
Sure.
How about
and then,
that?
And then,
till you
but
sang.
Just, you look
that was
a little
the end of that.
When you said I was straight, you looked
you
a little
disappointed.
You shouldn't
have ended that.
You said I was straight, you looked a little disappointed.
No, I wasn't because I can switch you. All I have to do is sing.
That's what you do on the weekends.
Would you like to see my penis? Like the Eiffel Tower, which has not been built yet.
We have got to wrap it up right about now.
Will be right there.
I want to thank everybody at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick and Roddy Swearingen. And of course, I'd like to thank Ben Stewart.
Ben
Stewart
on
sound. If you can possibly.
Philly in the house. Bring some scrapple next time.
And I'd also like to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, he wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
If he didn't rate Les Mis, he can suck my balls.
And one more time, Craig Shoemaker. Thank you, man.
Thank you
are quite a talent. Thank you so much for coming. You guys can find him at CraigShoemaker.com, LaughterHeels.com, and on Twitter at TheLoveMaster.
Yeah, baby.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
And you can follow me, follow me. I'll take you down to the river. Follow me, follow me. I'll keep you silent.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.